B-Pod Studios.
Top. Miss something?
Wonder Woman was there, but she's lost all her powers.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Toucher and Rich on Boston's home for sports.
Yeah, it's great to have with us the Red Sox poet laureate, Dick Flavin. Great to see you, Dick.
Good to be aboard. Good to be aboard.
We understand that you have a brand new poem.
I have an opening day poem. Would you like to hear it?
I would love to hear it.
The long snowbound winter casts a dark pall till one day an umpire hollers play ball. Then skies start to brighten, blue displaces gray. Baseball springs eternal, it's opening day. The birds start to sing. The trees are in bloom. The umpire's dusting home plate with his broom. It's a brand new beginning, something we all cheer. It's baseball's way of Happy New Year. And then there's another line in there. And baseball playing, it's a Happy New Year. And it goes on and on. Whatever.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
No, not very good. Not very good.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Yes, Rich.
While we are waiting for our own Ty Anderson to get all set, we have been sent the official plan for tomorrow's pregame ceremony.
Oh, hell yeah. Boston Pops, they got to be involved.
Oh, you don't think Keith Lockhart's going to go out there with three buttons unbuttoned? Showing the world.
Hell yeah.
That luxurious thatch of chest hair he's got. So they're asking fans to be seated by 12:45 for the 2:05 game.
Oh, that happens a lot. It's going to happen. Everyone will be in their seats.
It's going to be Wakefield fever. Here he is, everyone. You see him every year. The Sox will unveil their 2018 championship banner, present World Series rings, and raise the 2018 championship flag. You will have the Boston Pops, of course, led by Keith Lockhart. They're going to perform both the Canadian and American national anthems, which will culminate in a flyover of four F-16 jets from the National Guard. I am so dumb because that's still cool. Like, being in a place where they do that, I've seen it a ton of times. It's still cool. A huge American flag will be draped over the Green Monster, which means they're super American. And the Hanscom Air Force Base military will be on hand. Sam Kennedy said last week that also it would be honoring the Super Bowl-winning New England Patriots. We have heard since then two players confirm that they're going to be there, Rob Gronkowski and Stephon Gilmore.
By the way, Gronk, we mentioned real quick, Gronk has nothing. He could show up wasted. Doesn't matter. I mean, and Gronk, what did he tackle Brady the last time he was out there just messing around?
I said this yesterday, or I said this earlier in the show, is that I heard speculation before they won yesterday, which softens the blow, that if they were to show up with such a poor starting record, like, would they be booed, you know, while they came out in the field, the opening ceremony? First of all, I don't think they do that. But I do think that the difference in cheers, the volume of cheers between the Patriots players that are out there and the Red Sox will be substantial. Like, you'll be able to tell the difference. The place will lose their minds when Rob Gronkowski steps out on that field. Now, I have heard that apparently neither Tom Brady or, of course, Robert Kraft are going to be out there. That's something that was floated out there. I don't know who the source was on that, but I thought I read it this morning. And then on top of that, you're going to have God Bless America in the middle of the seventh inning.
They're going all in. There's the anthems all over the place.
Springfield native Michelle Brooks Thompson. Is she the one who sang I'm a Bitch, I'm a Lover? Isn't that Michelle Brooks, I believe?
Well, I don't care for that language.
I'm a Lover. And then other surprises. So just get ready. You're going to see a whole lot of Uke tomorrow.
Is there a Flavinator coming out?
No sign of Dick Flavin. They have not mentioned that he's going to be there at all. I'm telling you, ever since the opening day poem debacle of 2015, I don't think they've invited him back.
I just was reminded of this. Didn't Ruth Pointer sing the national anthem for the home opener last year?
It was one third of the Pointer sisters.
Remember that?
They couldn't play get all three of them together. I apologize if one of them possibly tragically died, but they got one of the Pointer sisters.
Who last had a hit when?
When was Neutron Dance? That thing was lighting up the charts
80s,
in 84,
right?
Maybe?
Yeah.
It's like Fleetwood Mac, man. You can't get those egos involved.
Possibly not. So all of that, what I just told you, is going to take up an hour and 20 minutes?
Thereabouts.
Yep. 12:45 be in your seats
first
and then
pitch
2:05.
2:10 for 2:05, yeah.
They're doing a, I heard, a 15-minute version of the Star Spangled Banner. So be there or be square. Because it's going to get super American up in this piece.
Like as American as it gets. Like American as hell, as they like to say. You're going to get Toby Keith out there. He's going to put a boot in your ass. It's the American way.
It is. He is a tough fella.
Well, one gentleman that we are glad we are talking about playoff hockey with is, of course, our own Ty Anderson, who we were discussing off the air. Should we be just nonchalantly kind of saying the Bruins are going to at least the second round and not even worrying about Toronto? Or is this too much confidence, false confidence, Ty Anderson?
No, I think you should be confident. Like, they've played this team very well over the last few years. And clearly, if you like, you watch these games, they have no answer for Bergeron's line. And they get Jake Muzzin, and he's on their second pairing. And it's like, well, that doesn't really make any sense. You need the top pairing to shut down the Bergeron line. I don't think they can do it. I just, like, it's going to take Rask, you know, posting an 850 for them to lose the series, in my opinion. Like, I think it's going to be that, like, that bad. And Charlie Coyle has been a great addition, I think, for this time of year, the shutdown third line, if you will. So I like what they look like right now. It's just, it's a matter of the goaltending. And I think at the same time, if Rask plays poorly, Halak's right there. So you should feel good about this series, I think.
How much does Cassidy get credit for how he's able to turn this team? Because, I mean, no one expected, I think, this at the beginning of the year. I mean, look at the career years a lot of these guys had. I mean, Krejci, you take a look at, obviously, Brad Marchand with 100 points. I mean, all of these guys at the beginning of the season, if you wrote down what you thought they were going to achieve, not just in wins, but in personal numbers, you could probably argue that at least 50% of these guys overachieved.
Definitely. I didn't see this coming from 32-year-old Krejci. You know, like, I thought his best days were behind him. I thought, okay, Krejci's a 50-point guy now, and DeBrusk has to carry that line. And you look at DeBrusk, he's had, I think, 27 goals on the year. Remember, he had like a 16-game drought where he scored like one goal, and he just wasn't effective.
He wasn't on our show.
And then he came on our show. Yeah.
The bump. He actually credited you guys after a goal like recently. Like, yeah, he's done, the post game. He was like, shout out to the TNR. They got that first one for me. Well,
he's done it three times, and Fred said he talked to Torrey Krug this weekend, and Torrey Krug said, Jake DeBrusk truly, honestly believes that coming on the show is the thing that he has to continue to do to keep scoring.
Yeah, he's like a maniac. he truly believes doing this show has somehow affected his play.
As do I.
What did you respond? You're like, oh, like a crazy person? Like, is that what you said? Like, that's actually crazy.
It wasn't like Krug was going, yeah, it's super cool. I mean, Krug was going,
kind of busted his balls. Yeah,
yeah, he's like, he really thinks that you're calling into your show means something. And I said, well, it doesn't, but you know, we'll take it.
They're all listening, and they all like the bump. If he has a bad game, you have to get him on like the next day, even if it's not like a scheduled thing. You have to come on. If it's a -2 in game one, get him on Friday. Well,
who needs the bump the most? Who should we have on the show?
Probably Brandon Carlo, just for the health. Like, that's like the biggest thing. But hey, if this prevents you from like breaking a leg, come on here.
Okay, how good can a Brandon Carlo interview be? Let me know some things to ask Brandon Carlo. Because he comes on, I was just like, hey, Brandon Carlo, what's up?
Like, hey, it's cool to be walking right now, right? Like, yeah.
right,
you're not on crutches. That's pretty cool, huh?
That's how we can start things off.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so if you believe that, we were talking about this. Let's say, and because we like to do this in sports radio, let's just look at round two. Let's take a look at let's say the Lightning end up moving on, which of course they will. How confident are you in what you've seen over these past couple of matchups between the two teams? Because if you're the Bruins, you got to feel pretty good going into that 7-game series.
I think so, but like, Tampa has the switch, man. Like, you watch the Lightning and you see, like, they'll be trailing in games, and the third period comes, and they just turn it on.
Happened against the Bruins.
Yeah, they've done it against the Bruins twice now, the last two meetings. And I was watching them against Carolina, and Carolina, like, needed the game. It was desperation time for them. They were winning going into the third period, and the Lightning were just like, all right, we're going to score 4 goals now on, like, 10 shots in the third period, and there's nothing you can do to stop us. Like, they are a crazy good team. This is probably the best team I've seen, like, since, like, the Red Wings, I would say, back in the late 90s. And even, like, the mid-2000s.
15 Hall of Famers on that team, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, this team is just so complete. And you look at their defense, you look at their forwards, it's so hard to find a weakness. Like, we talk about that Lightning team, like, their weaknesses are probably Dan Girardi and Ryan Callahan. Like, these are two accomplished players that have been to a Stanley Cup with the Rangers before. So it's really hard to find, like, this team's weak spot. And so I don't want to say I feel confident. I think they could. It's going to take everybody pulling their weight and then some. Like, I just talked about how Tuukka can't blow this series. you're going to need him to be like a 925, 940 kind of goaltender because they have so many weapons. Like, it's unbelievable when you look at this roster.
All right, Ty Anderson in studio. If you have any questions, 617, or comments, and you just want to relive the Game of Thrones bit, give us a call at 617-779-0985.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Thanks for starting your day with Toucher and Rich.
Why are you doing this to me?
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Oh, yeah, crazy town. 98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Ty Anderson from 98.5thesportshub.com, who covers the Bruins, is in studio. So when you look at the future, you know, Torrey Krug's impending free agency. What do you think the chances are he sticks around?
I think very slim. Like, that's their biggest strength is their left side, and you have Chara. He's still good. You have Vaakanainen and waiting in the wings. You have Lauzon. He's looked good, and then you have Grizzlick and Moore. They're all signed. So, and he's going to be due big money. It's 5.25. People scoff at things he's overpaid now. Like, no, he's underpaid. Like, you look at puck movers in this league and what they make. Like, he could probably get 6.5 to 7 on his next contract just because of inflation and teams, the covet defensemen who can move the puck. So, do the Bruins want to pay that? Should they pay that? I don't know. I don't think so. Like, I don't think they will at the end of the day. So, now you're entering this offseason saying, okay, do you trade him or do you keep him for one last run at it and see what you can do? This team is so good with him. And I know people freak out when you say that, but you need a good power play if you don't have a great offense at 5-on-5. And this team, for a large chunk of the season, didn't. So they needed that power play. And you watch him. I mean, he is the centerpiece of their power play. Like, their best options on their power play are right shots. And as a left shot defenseman, he feeds them perfectly. So I think that that's a big decision. I don't see how they can fit him in long term, though. Really don't.
So you talk about the value of Torrey Krug and how he seems to be undervalued, and especially amongst fans, too. Who do you think has the worst unearned reputation? Like, the guy that fans tend to crap on, and you're looking at him play every night and going, how could you say that about this person?
I mean, Krug is up there for me because he's so talented in the offensive zone, and his contract doesn't kill you. It hasn't prevented you from getting a better defenseman to put somewhere else in your lineup. They landed on John Moore. Like, that was their upgrade. And it was kind of like, okay, he's a seventh defenseman. That's not really the upgrade you need. I would say Heinen is one of them. Like, and I don't know if it's because, you know, Felger's here from 2 to 6, and Felger's like, Heinen stinks. Like, he plays a quiet game, and he goes on and on and on. So I think people kind of parrot that naturally. But Heinen is a fourth-round pick who's 23 years old. And last year he had almost 50 points. And this year he hasn't played as well. He's still good defensively. He's still growing. But people get mad at Heinen like he's supposed to drive a line at 23. Like, that's not who he is. So I think he's one of them.
Okay.
In fairness, we've gotten a lot of mileage out of the Heinen not being good thing. Yeah. It drives.
Is it true?
It resonates.
Two straight hours the other day.
It resonates with everybody.
But it's there's, like, you know, the pillars of you know, Bruins anger on the internet is like, it's Tuukka, it's Krug. It used to be Krejci, but Krejci's kind of shut them up this year, and it's Heinen right now. Like, that's who it is.
And you think Tuukka doesn't deserve any of it this year?
No, he deserves it in bits and spurts. Like, I think he was terrible in the first month of the season. He came back from that personal leave and he was great. He was awesome from like December through February. And then March, since March, he's been kind of bad. Like you can't give up that goal. I know it's a meaningless game. It means absolutely nothing, but that Coburn goal, that fifth goal, basically from the neutral zone. He just whiffs at it and completely misses it. Like, that can't happen in the playoffs. Like, if that happens, people are going to get on him, and they should. Like those kind of plays cannot happen this year because this team, I don't think they have the same margin for error that they did last year, where they had this great offense that could score 5 or 6 a game. This offense has been better, but they're not built to win games 5-4 and 6-5. Like, they need to play a tight game with strong goaltending.
So what's your confidence with Tuukka going into the postseason then? Because according to you, it sounds like a little bit of a roller coaster.
Yeah, I, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably like a 6.5 right now. Like, because he's just looked so bad the last month plus. And, you know, part of it, I think, is this is who he is. Same thing with Halak. It's high highs and low lows. So you hope that he can hit that hard reset and get ready for game one. But this Leafs team is good. Like, this is a good Toronto team offensively. Defensively, they're a nightmare. But offensively, they can score with the best of them. So I really want to see how he looks in game one. I think that's the big tell, because if they lose game one and he gives up 4 goals on 28 shots, I think you see Halak in game two, because Cassie's really? He's not going to.
So you think he would pull a trigger like that quick?
I think he almost has to, because Halak has played so well.
But isn't that a confidence breaker? Like, especially, I mean, after one game, don't you think that he would at least put him in net for another one? Just let him get in there one more time.
But then if he doesn't snap out of it, now you're going up to Toronto 0-2, and now you're saying to Halak, hey, get in net. Like, that's hard. That's hard to do to Halak. Say, hey, by the way, if you lose this game, now we're down 0-3 to Toronto for game four in Toronto. Like, I think that's just as tough an ask, really. Like, so I don't know. Like, that's the hard thing. It's really hard to get a read on this goaltending situation, because both guys, when they're on, they're nails. But when they're terrible, like, it's really, like, unwatchably bad.
Well, we can ask Bruce Cassidy about that. Like, I mean, is there willingness to put in Halak if for some reason Tuukka's not delivering? And how quickly is that? How quickly is the Sandman come out on the stage and say, get in the net? I don't see him doing it in the second game, but then again, who knows?
Well, he said after Saturday's game, they asked him if he had any problems with it, like, the, you know, Tuukka's game. Do you have any issues with his game? And he said, no. He says, I think he'll be ready for game one and in good form, but we'll see. That's why we play the games. And I was like, that's a vote of confidence, but it's not a two-game vote of confidence. Like, that's how I, like, but we'll see. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Sure.
I wanted to go back to Toronto, and you were telling us how Toronto is good, and they have been. They have 100 points. 100 points is a good season, but the last month, they've been awful. I mean, I think it's 11 losses in 16 games. I mean, that's a sustained period of bad hockey. What leads you to believe that they can be good in the playoffs against the Bruins?
Well, I look down the middle. Like, they have Matthews, Tavares, Nazem Kadri. That is a great one.
Kadri didn't have a good year this year.
No, but he's a player that I think always plays well in the postseason. Like, you look back in 2013, I thought he was good against Boston. Last year, when he gets suspended, like, before that, he was playing well, I thought. So I'm curious as to...
Their defense is bad, and I'm still going to throw Kadri out, because I haven't seen anything for about 3 or 4 months that leads me to believe that he's going to play well.
They're also infighting.
Yes.
Which is not...
That's another part of it. That's right. I've read that too. So I go back to, they played poor hockey for the better part of a month. 16 games is a pretty good sample size, especially when it's the last 16 before the playoffs, and you have two really good players, a decent goaltender that can play above average hockey, and a defense in front of them that's lousy. So I see Bruins in 5. I don't know how you see differently.
Because it's Bruins-Leafs, and I can't convince myself to think that this is going to be anything less than a 6 or 7 game series, because these teams, they just know each other so well that I think it's rare that you get an absolute beatdown in the first round with a division rival. And I know that the format is now set up for division rivalries and whatnot, but you look at when they play a team they know well, you know, Toronto back in the day, even Buffalo in 2010, like, when you have a division rival, I feel as if it goes 6 or 7 almost every time. So I think that's why I'm just convinced that I don't think that any team, and a 100-point team, is going to roll over and die as bad as they've been. I just think they have the skill that should at some point wake up and take over a game at some point.
I know you cover the team, but do you get that thing that we get where it almost becomes painful to watch some of these games at the end because it's so stressful?
Oh, it's awful. I have like a stomach ache for the next month and a half.
Absolutely. That's true. Exactly what we were saying.
I remember both the times that the Bruins went the distance, made it all the way to the Stanley Cup final, the one where they won it and the one where they lost it. I remember my stomach actually hurt at the end of that because of so many games, especially when they won it, because you had those three different series go 7 games. I mean, that just sucked. And it truly, like, there were times, and Fred said it best, where it was almost better to turn the game off.
That's what I do. If they're down a goal, I just turn the game off.
And come back after it's over with, look at the score, and then watch it.
No, I'll come back and I'll see if it's tied, then I'll watch it. But if they're still down, then I turn it back to something else.
Anyone who says, like, they enjoy overtime hockey in the playoffs,
it's the worst.
Is a lunatic.
It's the worst. Now, it feels great when they win. Like,
it's the worst feeling in the world when they lose.
Remember that triple overtime game against Chicago in the Cup? Or was it double or triple?
It was triple.
Triple
it was
overtime
like the
against
Chicago. Second or third longest game in NHL history.
God, it was awful.
And I would say this, like, I truthfully, Like, I grew up a fan of the team. I cover the team, yes, but ultimately, like, the playoffs, like, I want to see the city happy. I want to see these fans happy. Like, it's a cool thing, and I think when you get to know the players as people, too, you want to see them succeed, like anything.
Sure.
You know, you have relations with these people, and it doesn't interfere with the coverage of the team, but at the end of the day, I mean, if this team does well, it's good for business.
Right.
And I just, when they lose, man, it's like the worst feeling in the world. Like, 2010 in Philly, I was in the stands for that one, like when they choked that away.
Oh, that was the worst. I think of all the losses, like, I mean, yeah, even like the way that they lost the Stanley Cup against the Blackhawks, that sucked because it was bang, bang. But that one against Philly, I don't think that there's been a worse loss in the past like 10 years that the Bruins have had.
Yeah, they were up
three games to none. And then they were 3-0 to none
in game 7.
Yeah.
You know what? The loss actually kind of like is a sneaky, painful one, in my opinion, is 2009 against Carolina. Because that team was, that Bruins team
they got the
stacked.
President's Trophy that year, right?
Yeah.
They were up 3-1, right?
1 point away from it? Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
Up 3-1?
No, they went down 3-1.
Down 3-1.
But they fought back and made it a game 7, and like Byron Bitts scores in like the first period. You're like, wow, they're going to win this game.
Did
then,
Ward get in a fight in that game?
He got sucker punched in game 5 by Scott Walker. And they didn't suspend Walker. They fined him. And the Carolina coach was like, oh, I'm just going to sell one of his trucks. He was being like just like a absolute jerk about it. And it was like, I hate this Carolina team. I never thought I would hate a Carolina team, and now I hate this team.
Yeah.
That loss absolutely sucked. And then I think in 2017 when they lost to the Senators, like you got it because like they were so injured. But that Senators team was so crappy. You're like, oh,
but they moved on.
These guys.
They moved on with that. They're the Virginia of hockey. They just like moved on by playing boring hockey. All right, well, Ty Anderson, you can read his stuff at 985thesportshub.com. Thank you so much, sir. We do appreciate it. Here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Get the app, get the Sports Hub, get Toucher and Rich. Download the Sports Hub app today.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
985, the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. Rich, what have we not gotten to today?
Well, remember what people were saying after he ended up getting traded to the Raiders, that maybe this whole Antonio Brown thing was an act in order to get off the Steelers and go to a team that he really wanted to be on, or just get away from Ben Roethlisberger, and that's why he was kind of acting like an a-hole. Well, apparently it wasn't an act at all, because he continues to pick fights with people that there's really no reason for him to pick fights with. So if you remember a couple of weeks ago, Juju Smith-Schuster put out this tweet. It was a picture of him hugging Ben Roethlisberger, and he tweeted, I was so blessed to enter the league and play with a Hall of Fame quarterback as a 20-year-old. Ben has taught me so much. He's a true leader, and I can't wait to rock with my guy this season. And not too long after that, Antonio Brown tweeted out something kind of cryptic that seemed like an answer to that, saying, do not listen to any NFL player who haven't gotten paid yet. They will do and say anything to make sure they're going to get paid, even if it's compromising integrity or anything. Sad but true. Okay. Now, many people thought that was a shot at Juju Smith-Schuster putting out that tweet, but it wasn't directly addressed to Juju Smith-Schuster, so you kind of filed that one to the side. And then you had this weekend, which really left no doubt. So somebody tweeted Antonio Brown a tweet that said, 2018 Most Valuable Player, Juju Smith-Schuster, and it's a picture of number 19 right there with his hand up and a ball in his hand, and Antonio Brown retweeted saying, emotion. Boy fumbled the whole postseason in the biggest game of the year. Everyone went blind to busy making guys famous, not enough reality this days. By the way, check the list. And there was some list for some team award that's not even real. And Antonio Brown had won that. So he's saying that Juju Smith-Schuster fumbled the postseason away and crapping all over the guy. They're not even teammates anymore. So to that, Juju Smith-Schuster tweeted, all I ever did was show that man love and respect from the moment I got into the league. I was genuinely happy for him, too, when he got traded to Oakland with a big contract. And now he takes shots at me on social media? Crazy how big that ego got to be to take shots at people who show you love. SMH. Which means shaking my head. So congratulations, Antonio Brown. You're an a-hole, and this wasn't a ruse, and now everyone truly knows what you are. So good for him.
And everyone knows diva receivers always equal championships.
Oh, you know, I want him to be on Hard Knocks. Why, you have to you have to get the Raiders
Oakland's
on Hard Knocks.
Oakland's got so much stuff going on. I mean, if they don't choose Oakland and the fix was in, somebody paid somebody something.
Because there's a point where you just run out of because all the teams are going to say no. I guarantee you that there's no team that really wants to be on it. And the Raiders, in my opinion, is the best choice. I know that Detroit might be kind of funny because it'll piss off Matt Patricia. And you'll get to see the behind the scenes of Matt Patricia and how much he's trying to act like Bill Belichick and how much the players don't like him.
You're also going to get a very combative Lions team that's going to do the exact minimum required. They've come out and said it.
Well,
they
honestly, though, I mean, all HBO has to do is like promise Mark Davis like a bowl of jelly beans or something. I thought, sure, no problem.
Sweet.
Jelly beans, I got it.
Sweet.
We'll name a platter after you at P.F. Chang's. Already got one.
Just my little signature at the bar.
Well, the WWE fan who attacked Bret Hart has been charged with 2 counts of assault in the third degree and disorderly conduct. As I was saying, there is a guy, there was a website I saw that went down the rabbit's hole and found out who this person was and what he's been tweeting. And he's a guy who's been tweeting different wrestlers and saying crazy stuff about him. Like he's going to take them all down. Like he's like an imaginary wannabe wrestler in his head.
Now, did he have a fake, like, Jamaican?
It was like the Rasta Man hat that you buy when you go to Jamaica that has the fake dreads on it.
So yeah. At least he dressed to impress.
Apparently he did. He just got right past security, knocked over Bret Hart. A lot of people were saying at first, is this some sort of work?
I thought.
And then I say, watch the video, because Travis Brown, who is the husband of Ronda Rousey, beats the living snot out of this guy. And another dude, I forget his name, while they're walking out. So they're holding him. Like there's like one guy holding each leg and one guy holding his hands. So they're carrying him out. So as he's like in a Superman position, there's a dude walking in front who just does an uppercut to his chin while he's lying there defenseless. So that dude got his ass kicked. There's no way that was a work. And of course the WWE came out and made a statement saying such. So,
didn't Jimmy Stewart tell us that it's an unwritten rule among all wrestlers?
If anyone attacks you in the ring like a fan, you go ape.
Yeah, just basically.
Go ham on that guy. Throw the people's elbow. It's one of the only
rock
terms
reference
I know.
Right there.
Is that the Rock? I don't know. I just give him the RKO.
The what?
It's the Randy Orton. I don't know where the K comes from. It's like a TKO, but it's an RKO.
Go full honky talk, man.
Is that the Randy knockout? I'm going to give you the Randy.
Bob Backlund chicken wing.
It's where I'm physically aroused and I punch you in the mouth. It's the Randy knockout.
Honky talk, man.
You might want to turn around for this one.
Oh, man. That's not cool.
That's not cool. So Randy.
Yeah. Do the junkyard dog and grab them cakes.
Well, the 2019 Basketball Hall of Fame television show is going to suck in ratings because the three people being inducted, Vlade Divac, Sidney Moncrief, and Paul Westfall. There you go. So tune in for that
Vlade
one.
Vlade Divac?
So when the biggest name is Vlade Divac, that's when you go, all right.
No, no, Westfall's the biggest one around here. Come on now.
Okay.
You
well,
know that?
Whatever it is, I don't care.
Westfall, former Celtic.
All I know is that if it's not Michael Jordan crapping on everybody that he ever played with, then I don't want to watch it anymore. Do you remember his Hall of Fame speech?
Yes.
Yeah. You want to talk about somebody who might not have the shiny reputation if he grew up in the era of social media? Like that guy. They did such a good job protecting him from having to, like, speak his mind that when he finally did at the Hall of Fame ceremony, I went, oh, my gosh, this dude's been an a-hole for a long time, apparently.
Yeah, he just was, you know, he's considered the best player of all time, and he wanted everyone to know it.
And he did.
Yes.
Didn't he say that his coach, what's his name, the famous coach from UNC? No, UNC.
Dean Smith.
Yeah, Dean Smith. He said, Dean Smith one time came up to him and said, come on, Michael, there's no I in team. And Michael said, he said to him, but there's an I in win.
Can't argue with that.
There you go.
Cannot. All right, Rich, when we come back, what will we talk about?
Somebody who said they would never host SNL has agreed to do it. And this might end up being a must watch.
All right. Oh, I think I know who it is. All right. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Watch Toucher and Rich on Twitch. Follow the Sports Hub on Twitch.tv for live shows and reruns. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich. And we are 10 minutes away from perhaps Huey Lewis in the news.
Yeah, we have not seen anybody from the midday show yet here. Apparently traffic is horrid, so we shall see. You want to hear a really juicy rumor that I heard this weekend?
Sure.
All right. This is from somebody who would know if this was indeed going on. Somebody who I would say was pretty trustworthy. I'm not saying that this is like the closest person to the source, but it's somebody who would know. So according to this person, someone has approached James Dolan about purchasing the New York Knicks, and apparently for the first time, James Dolan is considering making the sale. And one of the reasons is because the purchaser has thrown out a Godfather offer that would be tough for Dolan to refuse. That person is Jeff Bezos of Amazon. And from what I've heard...
He's got the money?
He might have to scrap together a few dollars.
I mean, he just got that divorce.
I know. I don't know how he could possibly afford it after giving up 25%. Oh, yeah, he could just, like, sneeze and make that amount of money and no problem whatsoever. So what I have heard is that Jeff Bezos has gone to him and made him such a ridiculous offer that it's the very first time Dolan has gone, all right, I might not want to do it. Think about how that would change everything. If for some reason this all went through, now, I'm trying to remember how long it took for like Ballmer to buy the Clippers from that crazy dude who was talking about Magic Johnson having AIDS.
He's got AIDS!
Donald Sterling. I'm trying to remember how long it took. If for some reason this thing happened pretty quickly and they were able to at least get close to closing the deal by the time the offseason came around, wouldn't that change everything as far as a player's decision to play for the team? If you're somebody like Kevin Durant or even Kyrie Irving, and you have been shying away from playing for the Knicks because ownership is so bad, and thinking that the Nets are a team that you would rather go to because you want to be in Brooklyn, if you heard that Jeff Bezos was now the owner of the Knicks, wouldn't that immediately make that, once again, the place you would want to play?
Yes, I think that it would improve your chances of getting free agents
by a zillion. By a zillion, it would get people to go there.
Plus, everyone would respect him because he's got so much money and he's associated with that and he's famous.
Now, he'd been thinking about doing it for a while, and I think one of the first, according to this source, but I think one of the things that kind of spurred him onto that is originally he wanted to open up that second headquarters, remember, on the outside of New York.
Yeah.
And that fell through. But he still, even after it fell through, according to my source, wanted to continue to try to buy it.
Also, well, this is your source.
Yeah, it's my source. I told you. Ooh. This is the person I talked to. Yeah.
Oh.
And they said that...
So none of this is real.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right. It's my imaginary source.
Here we go.
Once again, as I said, this is not the person.
It makes sense.
And on top of that, now that his divorce is finalized...
He knows the capital he has to work with.
Well, there might be a willingness to move. And try to move from his home and move to New York City. That's the other thing that was thrown out there. But more than anything, this is something that discussions that, according to my source, this is real. It's been going on. And for the very first... I don't know why Dolan doesn't sell the damn thing. He hates being the owner. He hates it. He gets yelled at everywhere he goes.
You know why? It's a toy. There are only so many of these. And he's got one of them. And he wanted the franchise because he wanted the franchise.
And if you're Jeff Bezos and you're a guy who has that money, wouldn't you want the Knicks... The most valuable franchise in basketball. As a matter of fact, I think it's a top five valuable franchise in America.
Yes.
Like it's a Cowboys, Patriots, and I believe the Knicks.
Yeah, the money's going to go up. He's not going to ever have to sell short.
Knicks are worth $4 billion last time I saw on Forbes.
No, you win Sacramento. if you're that wealthy.
But honestly, I mean,
yes, I could see that. And it's all vanity. And I'm sure that, you know, owning the Knicks is a big vanity project.
The same thing with Bezos. You know, it's
well, that's what I'm saying.
And then apparently, and I don't know if this is true, and I was told this, there's some history between Bezos and Prokhorov over with the, I guess there was some sort of thing where they don't get along, they don't like each other. Perfect. And this is almost kind of motivates him even more.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but this is what I was told. And I haven't looked up the story. I don't know what's out there. So there you go. Juicy rumor. Take that for what it's worth. Well, Shazam is number one at the box office with $53 million. Apparently it's supposed to be good. I just love how, like, the DC just said, hey, you know what we were doing with our old movies? Don't do anything like that. And I want you to do everything exactly like the Marvel movies. And they've hired people to make it light, funny. They did it with Wonder Woman, which was a hit. Aquaman the same way. And now all of a sudden, or maybe it's just Ben Affleck. Maybe he's poison. Who knows? But either way, Shazam does very well at the box office, $53 million. I know somebody who saw Pet Sematary who came in at number two. It made $25 million. They said it was awful.
Well, even though they spell cemetery with an S,
yes,
you're telling me that's awful.
It's because, well, I mean, the book was great. That's one of the few. Yeah,
Stephen King doesn't like any of these the Pet Sematary movies.
I thought the first Pet Sematary movie was good. I actually liked it. I thought Gage was a pretty good bag. Like, the kid was pretty terrifying in that movie. I thought Christine was a good movie. Cujo was a great movie. And The Shining was, like, a perfect horror movie. It might be the best horror movie ever made. So Stephen King doesn't, like, strike out on everything recently other than It. I know The Dark Tower apparently was awful, the Gunslinger movie that came out with Idris Elba. That was apparently trash.
McConaughey was in that, right?
Yep. That was supposed to be garbage. Didn't see it. Was looking forward to seeing it. But and I know It 2 is coming out soon, but, yeah, it's not supposed to be good. Dumbo comes at number three, Us, then Captain Marvel. And the one person who said they would never host SNL is an ex-SNL alum.
Yeah.
And it looks like...
Very well-dressed man.
He will be returning in 2 weeks. It doesn't say... Oh, May 4th. May 4th, Adam Sandler will be returning to Saturday Night Live. Hopefully, he will bring back some of his own characters.
Canteen Boy.
If he had to bring back one character... Okay, that's the question.
Canteen Boy.
I don't know if you can do Canteen Boy now. Like, I think that's one of those skits that I don't think you can do it.
I don't think
things have changed.
Because Canteen Boy was essentially Alec Baldwin, like, trying to hook up with a kid.
That was one. Okay, like it was a recurring character.
Okay, but wasn't that the skit? Was that he was around a campfire and Alec Baldwin was a grown man trying to hook up with a kid?
Yeah, he was the scout leader.
Okay, the Hurley-He boy. But Farley's gone, and Farley was the funny part of that skit. Let the boy pet your dog! God, for what? Remember the Hurley boy?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay. Opera Man was great.
Yeah.
Iraqi Pete was great. And one more thing. Go to hell. You don't remember that? That was great. Oh, what other character could he bring back?
Canteen Boy.
Cajun Man was pretty good.
Cajun Man, not a lot there.
Okay, but neither was Opera Man.
No, I didn't care for Opera Man.
Opera Man, Cajun Man, they're both pretty good.
The Gap Girls thing wasn't that great. But Farley, he needs Farley.
He does kind of need Farley, because then you can bring the couple back, too, which was hysterical.
Yes.
When they were reading through the Zagat's Guide.
Yes, that was great.
Which was fantastic.
Yeah, but that's all Farley.
I mean, I'm thinking of all the great... like Sandler skits, and you're right.
Do you remember that album, like his first album?
They're All Gonna Laugh at You. It's fantastic.
It's fantastic.
They're All Gonna Laugh at You was a great comedy album.
I think that was like the last great comedy album that everyone had.
Yeah.
Because that was after the Jerky Boys.
Because the Jerky Boys was there, and then before that, everyone, I mean, this was like maybe 10 years before that, but Sam Kinison's Have You Seen Me, Dice Rules,
Everyone
had that. And then, yeah, just people stopped buying comedy albums.
Even though it's not a very good album, the first skit off the last Adam Sandler with the toaster.
Oh, you told me about that. Yeah, I forget that.
Well, he has several times.
If he can hook up with the toaster, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. It doesn't know it's a toaster.
Oh, it doesn't know it's a toaster. Yeah. Oh, we are less than a minute away, and they are not here.
No one's here?
We might have to get some Huey Lewis ready.
All right. Now, as long as I'm not the only one who's ever been late, I wonder if there'll be any guff handed around, because I'm chalk out of material.
here we go.
If you hear it after John Wallach's headline, do the headlines early. That way we can play it and see if they're late.
All right, fair enough.
There's going to be a point where they make us talk again.
And they're on TV, so on TV seems to be like empty chairs.
Oh, that's a good point.
What's up, Comcast?
All right, go ahead, go to break. Let's do it now. Bye. Let's say bye. Say bye, friend.
Bye, bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.